Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. This is Chad Young. Pete Ball is away this week, but in Pete's absence, we had a great guest on the show, Raymond Atherton from the Fantasy Ace Ball podcast. Raymond, thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I've been on the Fantasy Ace Ball podcast with you and Tim Kanak, the host of that, and we've chatted a couple times before. But I'm glad to have you over on our side for this one. And yeah, invite, you know, just for the listeners out there, what's the best way for them to find that podcast or to find you and your thoughts on the fantasy world?
Yeah. So, Tim, I would say it's Tim's podcast. I just show up sometimes. He's, at Fantasy Ace Ball. That's the name of the podcast. I am at Raymond Atherton on Twitter. I've been trying to make it a point to tweet more my own original thoughts about fantasy baseball, but I would say mostly I just retweet other people's opinions and, news updates.
Yeah. Still useful. Good stuff. So you should follow Raymond. You should check out the podcast. It's a good podcast. If there's anybody who talks sort of keeper leagues and outer new leagues as much as we do, it's them. So if you're listening to our show and you don't know theirs, you should check it out. It's a good one. I invited Raymond on today. He is in the Auto New Podcasters League. That was a league that was started by Derek Van Riper last year with a handful of different podcasters from around the fantasy baseball world. And Tim and Raymond co-manage a team in that. I've got a team in that. Pete's got a team in that. And I reached out to that group and was asking, you know, who's relatively new to Auto New, either last year or this year, maybe even new to sort of keeper formats in general. And Raymond raised his hand and said, yep, pretty new to this. And so, Raymond, you were telling me you've been doing fantasy baseball for a long time, but it was just last year was the first year you joined a keeper league?
Yeah, so I've been playing fantasy baseball, I don't know, maybe my junior, senior year of high school, and then moved off to college, played with, you know, college buddies. And I was the commissioner of my own 10-team league, always struggled to have 10 guys who would care, you know, after the All-Star break when you get buried in the standings.
Yeah.
And so I got asked to join a more competitive one with one of my college buddies, and that became like my new home league. And then during COVID, I started a different podcast with one of my college buddies who's pretty into the real life baseball. He mm-hmm. works at a complex in North Carolina, trains with some minor league guys, college guys, high school kids down there. And then that kind of, you know, died. And then I do a lot of the analyst drafts with CBS. And I was listening to Tim's podcast a few years, maybe just a couple years ago. And I realized he did it by himself. And my podcast had died. And so I shot him a message. And I was, hey, do you want to stop talking into the void and have a co-host so you're not just soapboxing for an hour at a time? And he said, yeah. And he invited me to all these leagues. And I don't know, like 2.5 years later, yeah, I'm in 12 leagues, man. TGFBI, OPL. Yeah.
It grows quickly.
Yeah. It's out of control.
So yeah, I was looking, you sent me this list of teams of keeper leagues you joined. You've got a 20 team 9x9 head to head categories league with keeping seven. What are the 9x9 categories?
I will pull it up just to verify, but the original 5x5 plus walks, total bases, and OPS.
Wait, that's only eight. You're missing one. 5x5, walks, home runs, bases, OPS.
Maybe it's only eight. No, because we have innings, runs, home runs, RBIs. Oh, hits. Total hits. I looked right over that. and then for pitching, it's innings pitched added, holds added, Ks per nine added, and quality starts added. So it counts wins and quality starts.
Interesting. Yeah. So there's some pitching combinations there, because like, you get, you know, a guy who goes 6-7 innings and gets you a win is like hugely valuable, but also hits and average really shifts the balance because it's, I mean, I guess you have walks, you got total bases in there. Like there's some stuff in there that helps the power hitters as well. But like, I don't know, I'm thinking about like a, you know, Luis Arias or someone like that, who is sort of a, I find to be a not that valuable fantasy player in most cases because he just does so little. But the one thing he does really well, and that's hit for average and get hits, right? So all of a sudden he's a lot more useful in that format. It's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, you can find value in pretty much anybody.
Yeah. Well, before we dive in much further, I do want to take a moment to point out this is episode 133 of the Keeper Cut podcast. And as you know, we do our weekly look at the jersey number related to our episode number. And so the jersey number for this week is 33. Pulled up our list, and there's a bunch of guys. This seems to happen every week recently. There's a bunch of guys who, like, Frank Robinson wore 33 for 1 year. Scott Rolen wore it for 2 years. His 2 years with the Blue Jays, which I didn't even remember he wore that number then. Louis Tiant wore it for 8 years. Bobby Abreu for his 1 year with the Dodgers. Mike Piazza for a year with the Padres. I literally didn't remember Mike Piazza played for the Padres.
I did the same thing.
Guys who wore this jersey for a meaningful chunk of their career, there's two guys who really stand out. That's Larry Walker and Eddie Murray. And every time we go through this, Pete and I always end up with this, like, there's the best players to wear the number, and then there's the guys who, like, matter to us because we grew up watching them, and then there's the guys who matter to us because they play for our teams. And, like, Eddie Murray was on those 90s Indians teams that turned things around for Cleveland baseball. Walker, you know, a Hall of Famer that I saw play through the prime of his career and sort of through my some of my formative years as a baseball fan. Like, and those two guys are the best to wear the number. So for me, those guys stand out. Is there anyone who stood out to you?
Yeah, I was a catcher growing up, and so I Veritek and Piazza really stood out to me, but the other two are chew-ins for the right answer to this question.
Yeah, that's fair. Veritek is a guy I didn't even really think about him, but he wore it for his entire Boston career for sure. I don't know if he...
And like, if you just wanted to go on vibes and that iconic swing, it's a decent place to send it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Plus, it is, of course, you know, a Boston guy to help Pete out. He's up here, but he can be here in spirit. So we can give this episode to Veritek. I have no issue with that. But let's dive back into what we're here to talk about, which is sort of your transition into playing keeper leagues and auto new leagues. And, you know, I think one of the things that I always like to talk to guests about when we have guests on is, like, keeper leagues tend to have weird rules. And so I asked you about, like, what's the most unique rule? And you've got a league where you can keep players who you didn't keep. You could draft a guy, cut them, and then the offseason be like, no, I'm keeping that dude. That's
absolutely fascinating. You can trade him too. So, like, I traded for Gunnar Henderson really early last year. And I was setting my keepers, you know, in the offseason. I'm looking, and I'm like, oh, man, I didn't draft him. Oh, no. But, yeah, it's kind of a cheat code if you pay attention in those later rounds. Like, I got to keep a 23rd round Edwin Diaz this year. Ooh. And then I just did it again with Felix Bautista. Like, those – that league is super competitive with saves, too. So it's like – you get a top five closer that late. It's a no-brainer, especially with this pitching landscape we currently find ourselves in where nobody is safe.
But then having drafted him, you can cut him right away. Yep. Like, I don't know, does that league do fab or does it do waivers? Like, how does that?
It's just waivers, yeah. Rolling waivers. You move to
so
the
you
end
just, like, the first day of the season be like, see you later, Felix. I'm going to go get somebody who can help me this year. Yep. And then next, you know, January, February, you can keep, you said it's, you keep one hitter, one pitcher purely based on who you drafted.
Yeah. So if
that's
I,
so fascinating.
If I read you the last five picks that I had was Edwin Diaz as a keeper, Bo Naylor, Sadane Rafaela, Felix Bautista, and Jason Dominguez. And I would feel pretty confident to tell you that Bautista and Dominguez will be my keepers.
Makes sense.
And I cut them
Yeah.
immediately.
What was the rationale from that league of like, do you know why they set that rule for you can keep guys you drafted no matter what?
I don't, to be honest with you. This is the my new home league I referenced earlier, and they have some other unique rules where, like, we don't have bench spots for pitchers.
Yeah.
I think most
Do
of
you
their
have bench
rules,
spots for hitters?
yeah, four.
But they have to be hitters. You can't be like, I'm
Have to
gonna
be
keep.
hitters. In CBS, you can set pretty strict roster rules. And
Yeah.
so if you have, what do we roster? 10 pitchers? If you have 11 pitchers, your roster is illegal and you don't get stats for that day. It's crazy, man. So, like,
How does Ohtani count when he's healthy? I mean,
he's
this year
one
I suppose
player.
he's fine, right? He's not a pitcher, so it doesn't matter, but like.
But here's the other thing is, you always have to have, this is, I hate this actually. You always have to have the proper number of hitters and pitchers. So, like, if you move Ohtani from your hitters to your pitchers, you have to have an IL pitcher to move off your bench so that you have the proper number of bench players. It's
So if you're the team that has Ohtani and CBS, he is a single player, can be used in both spots. You have to move him in CBS between the two, like you said, right? Like you can put him in a
right.
util spot, you can put him in a starting pitcher spot, but you have to pick one. But in this particular league, if you had him in a starting pitcher slot and you wanted to move him to your util, you'd have to have a pitcher. And you don't have a bench, so you have to have a pitcher. You either have to pick up a pitcher or get a pitcher off the IL or whatever to move into a starting pitcher slot, like
Correct.
just for that day.
Yes. And then when you move him, yeah. But like, so with Ohtani, obviously you're going to use him as a hitter most,
Yeah.
six out of 7 days of the week or whatever. So, and we only get three add drops a week. So you, like, if you roster Ohtani, you pretty much have to have like a got like Spencer Strider this year, like a guy on the IL that you're never gonna move him. Like, he's just there to fill in when you move Ohtani.
That's just
Unnecessarily
wild to me.
complicated.
Yeah.
But I did draft Ohtani in the first round this year, and he might be one of the one. I don't know. You can kind of cheat and keep him as a pitcher. I did that a few years ago.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting one in like this year, he's easy, right? Because he's just going to be a util and that's fine. And you don't have to worry about all this like pitcher movement stuff. But yeah, I mean that really complicates your roster if you've got to go back and forth. Because like it's not just you have to have like Strider or someone like that to move into the spot for him. You also every time you move him to pitcher, you need to move Strider back to the IL and pick up a hitter, right?
Or so we have three IL spots, but yeah, slide an IL hitter to the bench for that day.
Goodness.
And like, I drafted Ohtani like his breakout year in like the 10th round or whatever. So obviously I kept him the next year. Like, he was a first round pick in the 10th round. And it took me probably half or three quarters of the season that second year to figure this out. And then the guy who drafted him the next year, the guy who had the one pick, he's like, "Do I want to take Ohtani number one?" He's like, "This looks like a nightmare." And I was
It
like,
just it feels like so much extra work.
"Yeah, I mean, if we had more IL spots or more roster moves, it wouldn't be that big of a deal." But this league, I guess, in its origins, had major issues with people just spamming streamers and winning
Got it.
volume categories, so they cut it down to three. They took the bench spots away from the pitchers. So I do know where some of those rules came from, but the draft keeper thing, couldn't tell you.
Huh. Man, that is that like I totally understand. I play in leagues that have a limited number of pickups per week, and I get why leagues do that. I play in, you know, Auto New has the 30-day waiting period when you cut a guy before you're allowed to pick them up again. I play in another league, a CBS league actually, that uses a 21-day period. Basically 3 weeks of fab has to go through before you're allowed to try to get the guy back. I get why people do that, because they don't want streaming to become a thing. This one feels like it went a little too far maybe, but it's fascinating. And I like these unique rules. The reason I like to talk about it on the show and stuff is, like, I find these unique rules fascinating, and they always create opportunities for people to do creative things and do things that, like, to try to find little edges, little advantages, like what you're talking about with, like, oh, if I want, you know, how do I use my draft? Okay, well, I can use my last round pick. Like, I'm going to cut my last round pick eventually anyways. So I'll use my last round pick on a guy I think I might want to keep, even though they have no value this year. Hopefully, like, somebody should have taken Shane McClanahan late, I would hope.
Right, yeah. It kind of counteracts, like, some of the risks you take too, right? Like, Tatis coming off that shoulder and the PED thing 2 years ago or whatever, like, he was a third round pick. That's a no brainer. Somebody got Bryce Harper in the fourth last year. That's a no brainer. Like, you don't feel as bad about taking those risks this year because it'll pay dividends next year.
Yeah, sure. So, and do you give up that draft pick to keep them?
Yeah.
Like, the next year they slot into that same round. Got it. Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, as you've made this transition into playing more Keeper and Dynasty and Auto New, what have been some of the challenges you faced, particularly with Auto New, because it is a little bit unique?
Auto New specifically, the platform is very different. First of all, just off the top of how it looks, how you look for players, the stats it shows you. So that kind of took a little bit to get used to. And then roster size. So last year, I definitely think I kind of misassembled my roster in terms of we're in an Ot New Points League for our podcast invitational, and I just didn't have enough pitchers or relief pitchers. And that you get 8 starts a week in the points leagues. And I think I had 9 starters coming out of the draft, and Verlander and Darvish got hurt before the season started.
Yeah.
So I was behind the 8-ball just from the start. And then the scoring is so unique. Like, even this year in the offseason, I traded for Mookie Betts, and I was all excited when they signed Ohtani. I'm like, dude, he's going to score 160 runs. And then I looked and he got points for runs.
No.
So it's like,
not those points leagues. Like,
you really have to recalibrate your brain about how to value players. And
I mean, I think that's definitely, like, if you're playing those points leagues, so it's like one of the reasons that the Podcasters League is a 5x5 league is DVR, when he was starting, it was like, let's at least keep one thing consistent for people, right? Like, they're going to have to figure out all the roster rules and how to build a 40-man roster and how to use all that roster space. But, like, let's not completely change player values on everyone. Also, which I get, I like the 4x4 roto in Auto New probably more than any other. That's what we do for our Keeper Cut Listener League, and I play a couple other leagues that are 4x4. But I like the points leagues as well. I like that it's different. I think it does a better job of valuing players properly. That isn't necessarily sort of the point of fantasy baseball. Like, and I think that's one of the things that's fun about 5x5 is there's a lot more strategic direction. There's more opportunities for trades because you can trade category for category and things like that. But, you know, it way overvalues stolen bases. It way overvalues RBIs. Like, it just
saves.
Like, it just does, because it puts them at an exact equal with runs and home runs and strikeouts and everything else. And so I like that part I don't like as much. And so I like playing all the different formats. But it's definitely like if you have traditionally been playing, whether you've been playing 5x5 or some other sort of, you know, something like that, 5x5, but with OBP instead of average or something along those lines, it does really shift your thinking on these players when you're looking at a totally different system.
Yeah, what, and I think...
Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it does a great job of, like you said, accurately grasping a player's value. Like, that's what you get when you start swapping out categories. It's like that, like, wins are antiquated. Let's put quality starts in here. Like, Atnu does all of that for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, you know, that when the scoring system was developed for the points leagues, I don't know, 12 years ago, something like that. It's all based on linear weights. It's based on the same things that measure, like WOBA for hitters. And so it is intended to really accurately measure like the amount of value a hitter brings to their team. And I'm glad to hear you think it does a good job of that. I think it does a good job of that too. I think it makes it sort of interesting and fun. But it is like I said, it's super, super different. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit about what you like about the change as you move over into Auto New. All right, welcome back. Chad Young on the Keeper Cup podcast, joined today by Raymond Atherton. And Raymond, we were talking about sort of your movement out of, not necessarily out of, I guess, redraft leagues. You're still doing plenty of redraft, but your movement into more of the keeper and auto new space. And can you talk about what you really, things you like about, whether it's about auto new, just about keeper leagues in general, like what's been positive about that change for you?
Yeah, I definitely like my home league, those late round draft steals that you can get for next year to set yourself up. And I've always been a prospect guy, like just part of the reason is because the Tigers have been pretty terrible most of my life. But I always thought it would be fun, you know, to be able to like, oh, I'm out of it this year. Well, in redraft, you can't really do anything. You just got to slog through the regular season until it ends. And I always thought it'd be fun to be able to, you know, flip your old guys for prospects or, cheap veterans who might be hurt or for whatever reason are devalued. But yeah, no, I think that's my favorite part is buying and selling. And most of the teams I took over were pretty terrible. My 20 team league, I definitely learned that league is all about difference makers. And so I traded Matt Olson for Corey Seager, and then I traded Corey Seager. Like, once you get your hands on those guys, you shouldn't ever give them up. So I definitely learned the deeper the league, the more important those guys are. But yeah, I bet I've made 10 trades in Atnu this year in our podcaster league. And I really like my team a lot.
That's in the 5x5 that we're in.
We are doing
or in your
really
or in your
we are in first place in that one. Our Ace Ball Invitational, yeah. I tried to get prospects that were close last year, so I had like Jackson Chourio and Evan Carter and Jordan Lawler. That didn't work out, but paying attention at the end of the, I don't know if this happens in all out new leagues, but like Shane Bieber got cut towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Nolan Arenado got cut, so I was able to pick those guys up at half their salary, and then I traded them all.
That happens quite a bit late in the season because you've got guys that are, you know, you get guys who are like overpriced but useful, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like looking at my roster right now in that podcaster league, and who do I have that sort of fits the bill for that? I have a handful of guys in my outfield. Like, I mean, Randy Arozarena is struggling right now. Jazz Chisholm's been pretty good. Ryan Reynolds not really doing as much as I hoped. Kyle Schwarber hasn't really been as good as he had been in the past. But like any of those guys, like they're all for me priced in the 20s. They are not like none of them right now are playing like guys I want to keep at those prices. Now, it is April 20th. Right. I'm recording this Saturday. Like there's a lot of time left. I'm not making keep decisions for the offseason today. But like, let's say that, you know, a guy like Schwarber or Reynolds continues to be decent, but not, you know, $27 for Schwarber next year, $26 for Reynolds next year. Let's say that they're just clearly not worth that. There will come a point at the end of the right. I can't cut them now. I don't want to cut them now. I don't need the cap space immediately. And they're still productive and useful for my team. And like, that's where a guy like Bieber, Arenado would have been last year for a team, right? Like, oh, I got a $30 Bieber and he's not worth anywhere near $30, but like he's still better than, you know, the crap I can get on the waiver wire. So I might as well keep rolling him out there. But then September rolls around and you don't need him anymore because you passed your innings limit or whatever. You know, you're not going to keep him. And so he gets cut so that somebody can pick up, I don't know, some random free agent they see out there that they're like, oh, this guy might be a keeper for me. Bieber's not, but this guy might be. Arenado's not. This guy might be. And so there is sort of a flurry of that kind of activity late in the season in most of my auto new leagues where you just have an opportunity to see what's going on and then figure out like, okay, I totally get why this person didn't want to keep a $30 Shane Bieber, but like a $15 Shane Bieber is kind of interesting.
Exactly. Right.
And so it is important, like paying attention right through the end of the season. And you'll see that like the way that the ad drops and things like that work, in an auto new league, the last day you can start auctions is 2 days before the end of the season. Basically, it's Friday of the end of the season, because the idea is those in-season auctions are to pick up players you're going to use this season. You start an auction Saturday, it ends on Monday. The season ended Sunday. You cannot pick that. You're not using that player. So auctions cut off Friday, and waiver claims cut off on Sunday. If a guy gets, so what that means is if you've got a guy like that, like a Bieber last year, you could cut them on Friday. They won't clear waivers till Saturday. Nobody can start an auction on them Saturday or Sunday after they've cleared waivers. It's too late to start auctions. If you're worried about them being waiver claimed, you could cut them on Sunday and the waiver claim won't process before the season ends. So you start to get into these strategic things about like, you know, how can I start some auctions late in the season knowing that I'm going to cut a guy, but I don't want to cut him until Saturday or Sunday so that nobody can pick him up. It's an interesting strategic thing that happens at the end of the year, but yeah, just paying attention. I mean, it's true in any fantasy league, right? Sometimes if you just pay attention, there's opportunities that you can take advantage of that other people have missed. So yeah, that's unfortunately the Bieber pickup looked really good for like a week and now has not helped you very much, I guess.
Well, all of those guys I snagged at the end of the season, I got like Shane Bieber and Arenado are the two that stick out. I thought there was a third one, but I don't see it currently. I traded them in the off season, but the thing that snuck up on me is when I picked up Arenado, I had done all the math of like, I have to cut these four players to get the money to clear the cap space. And I didn't know somewhere in the rules of Ottinu is you have to have $1 reserved for every roster spot.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. And I ended up having to cut Anthony Volpe as my last guy to make room. And that kind of looks bad this year, but points isn't his best format.
No. But yeah, I think he wasn't really playing his way into being a keeper as much as he's, you know, turned the corner this year. At the prices he was going last year, it'd be hard to have kept him this offseason. So
right.
But yes, that's a really important little detail that I think people miss is, and you know, the rationale behind that is with a 40-man roster, like you could theoretically try to compete with like a 32-man roster and leave 8 open roster spots if you wanted to. But if you did that and you will used those $8 on, like, if you spent $400 on 32 guys, it becomes sort of a different strategic approach, which maybe would be okay. But the idea was you can't do that. You need to be able to roster 40 players. If you don't want to roster 40, you want to have 32, that's fine. But you need to have that dollar open that you theoretically could roster all 40. And that's where that comes from. But yeah, I've seen that trip people up, and it gets really messy, because if you get in a situation where you've spent $400, but you only have 39 players, and then you cut a $2 player, now you have 38 players, but you only have $1 free, and you have $2 free. So you actually have to cut a $4 or more player in that situation in order to clear $2 of space, one for the guy that you already don't have and the other for the guy you're just cutting. And so I have seen situations where that gets really messy and teams end up with like cascading cuts that they can't quite get legal. So I've always like, we got a new manager in the podcaster league this year. It's like one of the few things I warned him about was like, hey, make sure you keep that dollar free, because if you don't, it'll really screw you up. It can get ugly.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. Is everyone else I wanted to cut was $2 or less, and it wouldn't have fixed the problem. I'm like, crap.
Yep. Yeah, you gotta get right on that. So let's pivot now to talk about some players, get some player analysis in here. And I went through your rosters in two auto new leagues, a podcasters league and that fantasy baseball invitational league, and was just looking at some names that I like looked at your roster and I was like, oh, this guy's worth talking about, this guy's kind of interesting, and came up with, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 names. I don't think they're guys we've talked about on the show recently, so I'm excited to discuss these guys a bit. But let's start off with, and I think this is on the fantasy baseball team in the podcasters league. Yeah. So that team, by the way, your team's doing great. You're tied for first as of this moment. But one of your outfielders, and you have a pretty short bench. You got a lot of prospects, a handful of injured guys. And so one of the guys who's basically locked into your lineup in a starting outfield spot is Evan Carter. And I am a big Evan Carter fan. I was super excited about Evan Carter coming into the year. Now, this is a 5x5 league. He is hitting 188, 2 home runs, a stolen base, 13 runs, 6 RBI. He is not doing great. Talk to me a little bit about like what you've seen from Evan Carter, and are you still feeling good about him? You getting a little worried? Feel like you need to add somebody in his, you know, to add some depth there or anything like that?
So I would immediately say depth in 5 outfielder leagues is very hard to come by.
Yeah.
But we do have a couple of bench outfielders in Sadane Rafaela, who had a homer and a steal yesterday, if I remember correctly. He might be coming around. And Cedric Mullins has been playing pretty well, too. But I don't think I'm worried about Evan Carter as of, you know, April 20th. Especially the left-handed young players, it seems like they sit a little bit more than you would like against lefties, and maybe can't get into that everyday groove. And I always try to remind myself, like last year with Gunner, 2 years ago with Bobby Witt, like those guys were pretty bad for like a month and a half or 2 months.
Yeah.
And then I think they both won Rookie of the Year, if memory serves. So yeah, I mean, it's been 3 weeks. Like, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Carter, he's had 77 plate appearances. Only 12 of those are against left-handed pitchers, and he has been absolutely atrocious against lefties.
You can't be worse.
He's walked once and been hit by a pitch. In the other 10 at-bats, he is 0 for 10, with three strikeouts. I guess three strikeouts isn't the end of the world in 12 plate appearances. 25% strikeout rate. That's not as, I guess it could be worse, but it's been ugly. But what's fascinating about that is his WRC plus against lefties is negative 33. His WRC plus against righties is 121. And so while his overall line looks very concerning, it's a 97 WRC plus, below average bat, which is not what you want out of a fantasy outfielder. His line against righties is kind of okay. The average is still low. It's only 222, but he does have a couple home runs. He's got a stolen base getting on base off a righty. Like, everything that looks a lot better when you just focus on what he's doing against right-handed pitchers, which you probably shouldn't be starting him against lefties, I think is what it comes down to. You know, whether or not the Rangers want to do that, leave up to them. But as a fantasy manager, he probably should be benched against left-handed starters until he shows he can hit them. He had some issues with strikeouts last year in his cup of coffee, but he's brought that strikeout rate back into line. His BAPIP is 208. I don't think he's going to be a low BAPIP guy. He should be a pretty high BAPIP guy. There are some things like, you know, he's not hitting the ball real hard, but I'm with you. I'm not super concerned. I think if anything, he's sort of an interesting buy low if somebody is concerned. But I do think there have been concerns about his ability to hit lefties, and Carter is not hitting lefties right now. So at least for now, I think regardless of what the Rangers do, I would be treating him like a platoon back, because I think it's just safer that way. But you need to have the depth to do that. You guys, like I said, Mullins could step in for you more often. Rafaela can occasionally. So you've got some options there, which helps a little bit.
He didn't have a hit against lefties in 11 plate appearances last year either. So his first hit off a lefty this season will be his first hit off a lefty in his career.
Yeah. Eventually it'll happen. I assume at some point in his career he will get a hit off a lefty. Most players eventually do. So another guy you have on that roster, and this is a guy I have on many of my rosters. I was very high on this guy coming into this season. And Joe Musgrove, he's been worse than Carter, I'll say. You also have him in that podcaster league. He has a 6.29 ERA in 24 and a third innings, obviously still very early, but over five starts now, his strikeout rate is way down. He's traditionally struck out 25-ish% of hitters. It's been as high as 33% of different kinds of his career. The last 2 years, it was over 24%. He's down below 18% this year. He's typically walked like 5-6% of guys. He's walking almost 10% of hitters this year. Nothing looks good. None of this looks good at all for Joe Musgrove. I will say on the teams where I have him, I actually am getting worried that he's just not finding it. Are you as nervous as I am? Or are you just like, hey, he's always been good, he'll be fine?
So Tim absolutely loves him, which is part of the reason he's on our team. I think he had him as like SP7 coming into the year. Oh, like insanely high on him.
Yeah.
I wasn't that in on him, but you know, co-managing a team, you gotta make some.
Yeah.
But he was the third guy, by the way, that I grabbed in FAI last year. Now that you bring him up.
Oh, and then I traded him late.
Got cut late, and I traded him in the offseason. But he was this bad last year. He gave up 9 earned runs in March, or in his April starts this year. He gave up 10 last year. Like, he's been just as bad as he was last year. But I don't know. I try to keep, like, I'm not going to do anything till the middle of May. Like, then I'll panic. I have him in my this league is, with no bench just, spots for pitchers. And mm-hmm. So that league, I am definitely getting worried. I had him and Cole Reagan's absolutely destroying my ratios today. And so, in that league, it's really hard to hold on to pitchers who are struggling this bad. A few years ago, remember that terrible Luis Castillo run he had? I
They
traded
got
him.
blamed on the cold weather.
I spite traded him. I'm like, get him off my team. He's ruining everything. But I don't know. He looks
Yeah, I mean,
bad. I was,
this is interesting though because you mentioned last year, so his first five starts this year, right? So he's gone five starts. He has a 6.29 ERA. His first five starts last year, he had a 6.75 ERA, and that five starts took him into May 20th by the time he got his fifth start last year. So it was much further into the season. But an
Right,
even
because
worse ERA, he was, let's see, he was striking out more hitters, and walking less, I think. So let's see. Last year through five starts, his strikeout rate was 22.3%. His walk rate was 8%. This year, it's 17.9% strikeout rate, 9.8% walk rate. So he's been worse. Like, if I look at, we can use FIP as sort of a good summary here. He had a 5.80 FIP through five starts last year. It's 5.14 this year. Actually, so maybe this year is a little better by that token. I don't know. It's a little confusing because what was the difference last year? Was he giving up a lot of home runs? Yeah, his home runs per nine through five starts last year was 2.25. This year it's just 1.19. So yeah, I mean it's a little bit of a different type of issue, right? The strikeouts and walks are more concerning this year. The home runs are less concerning, but the overall results through five starts, you're right. He was bad last year through five starts. So maybe I just should have waited for his sixth start instead before I started using him. But he starts tomorrow. Tomorrow will be start number six for him.
I thought he threw today. Am I wrong?
I think he's scheduled to pitch tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right. You're
I guess in Michigan where you are, it's Sunday already. So
right. True.
maybe he
Very
is
true.
pitching today, technically. Not for me though. For me, it's still tomorrow. But yeah, so that's interesting that he had such a weird. I didn't realize he had such a bad start last year. And his
Well,
final
last
line
year
last year was fine.
his sliders on Baseball Savant looked fine by the end of the year too, and there's a lot of blue on that page currently. But
Yeah,
he had
sure.
that weird start last year because he didn't he break his toe lifting weights or something? He dropped a
Yeah,
plate on
it's
his
some
toe.
weird. Right.
So he doesn't have that built-in excuse this year, but some guys are just slow starters. I mean, the weather's cold.
Yeah.
So, I don't
I
know.
mean, he did, like, he missed the second half last year. So a little bit of a different, maybe a different excuse, but again, a similar, like, it's just taken him a little longer to get up to speed because he missed some time. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to that. It gives me a little bit of like, because the thing I've been struggling with Musgrove is there's nothing that looks good. It's not like I
Right.
can look and be like, oh, he's struggling, but the underlying numbers aren't bad. The strikeouts are still there. Once he finds his control, like, it's like, no, everything looks terrible. So,
Yeah, walks are up, strikeouts are down.
yeah, but that gives me a little bit of like, all right, let's at least give it another start or two and see if he finds it because this seems to be an issue with him. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about a few more players that you've got rostered that I think are worth talking about. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young joined by our guest Raymond Atherton. And Raymond, those two guys were guys who were on your team in the Podcasters League. Now I want to jump over to your team in the Fantasy Ace Ball Invitational. And in that league, you've got a guy who I picked up in a couple places as well. He was highly sought after, I think, this offseason, at least by the time spring rolled around, and has not disappointed. That is Jared Jones. He's made four starts from an auto new points perspective, 5.84 points per inning pitch, which is terrific, terrific numbers. He's got a 3.13 ERA, 3.07 FIP, 2.16 XFIP. So he's had a relatively high home run per fly ball rate, which is usually a killer in auto new and often sinks pitchers. But when you are striking out 36.4% of hitters and walking only 2.3% of hitters, that's, I mean, you can give up some home runs because there's never anyone on base. So who cares if somebody takes you deep once in a while? Solo shots won't kill you. Yeah, I mean, are you, like, is he just an ace? I mean, is this it? Is he just, like, lock him in your lineup, forget it, good to go?
Yeah, Tim and I recorded, I don't know, 4 hours ago at this point, and he asked me if he's top 10, and I think that's a lot easier to say given the injuries we've had this season, but on a per-inning basis, I don't think I can name you 10 players that I'd rather have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm all in. Like, I got him for $4 on this team. I remember in the draft lobby or auction sitting there like, do I want to go to four? Like, really debating that last dollar because I had, like, I think I had $38 and 13 roster spots to fill. And, man, am I glad I did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think he's a stud. But I also wanted to, or told Tim earlier today, like, he was kind of a walk machine in the minors. So I do think there's some regression coming just in terms of command. But maybe some of those solo shots turn into two-run homers. But the stuff is just off the charts.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really find anything to be concerned about. The biggest question for me with him is he just doesn't have a track record that backs up this kind of performance. Like, he didn't pitch this well in A ball, let alone the high minors. And so I'm a little bit cautious of, like, you know, how realistic is it it'll maintain this, but
his walks per nine in every other season were 3.25 or higher, going all the way to 4.5 in A ball, and that's less than 1 per 9 currently.
Right.
There's no way that keeps up.
I wouldn't think so. And I think that, you know, the thing is, like, you know, if he can keep himself to even 3 times as many walks as he's giving up right now, instead of jumping all the way back up to 5 times as many,
right? Like,
that'll play still. Like, that'll be fine. So I mean, the reality is, while I have some nerves about what his future might be, you're not acting on that right now. Like, just keep him in your lineup, use him every time he's pitching, at least until he gives you some reason to doubt, because, man, he has been really, really good. I suppose the other thing to be concerned about if you've got him on your team is, at a, you know, he threw 122 and a third inning, two thirds innings 2 years ago, 126 and a third last year. Maybe they cap him at like 250 or 150, 160.
250.
I didn't mean that. But I'm already not that worried about that.
They're already doing that though. Like, he threw 59 pitches in 5 innings his last start because they said, you're throwing 5 innings. I don't care how good you look. So, like, I would much rather that happen than what the Marlins are doing with Max Meyer right now. Like,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, it might be frustrating if you're in a quality starts league. Like, you want that 6th inning, but you'll take this 7 Ks and 1 earned he gave up over those 5 or whatever it was.
Right.
And I mean, they say you can jump 30 to 40 is kind of the like accepted standard. So if he's pushing 150, 160, I think that's ace workload at this point, right? Like, nobody goes 200 anymore.
That's as much as you get from anyone. So let's take a look at the offense for that fantasy baseball team, because there's a couple guys there that I was really interested in this offseason, and they haven't been good that you have at first base. Now, you've got Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman has not been sort of, you know, vintage Freddie Freeman so far this year, but he's going to hit. It'll be fine. The other two first basemen you have on that team, who I imagine you came into the season thinking like, oh, these guys all share the util spot for me, are Christian Encarnacion Strand and Nolan Chanuel. And those guys both look really bad. How are you feeling about either one or both of those guys?
Yeah, it's a daily mental battle of who I start at my util. And it pretty much boils down to, is CES at home and is he facing a lefty? And if either of those are a yes, it's usually him. The good news is the rest of my offense is good enough. Like, I can kind of handle these 2 points a game I'm currently getting from these guys. But I'm less worried about CES than I am Chanuel. And he was actually I traded Vladdy. I got a really good deal on Vladdy in the draft. Mm-hmm. And then regretted it immediately because I had Freddy. So I... It's like, why did I do this to myself? So I traded him for Machado and Chanuel and someone else. And it was more of like, I'll hold on to this guy. $4, $6 next year isn't too bad. He walks a lot, doesn't hit for a ton of power. You don't care for that as much in this league. Right. So he was definitely more of a future asset, and I will probably trade him if somebody is willing to take him for something that could help me more now. But Tim reminded me how bad CES has been earlier when we were recording, and I'm not worried at all. Like, the Reds had just that stomach bug go all the way through their clubhouse.
Yeah.
Like, they've had a weird start to the season, all those injuries, everything else. Like, he looked really good in the spring, and I'm, like I said earlier, I'm giving everyone the benefit of the doubt till middle of May or something, some point. Yeah. Like, the Memorial Day.
Yeah. I'm with you on Encarnacion Strand. I mean, on top of everything else, like, his max EV is up this year. His average exit velocity is up this year. His barrel rate is up this year. His hard hit rate is down, but not very much. His ex WOBA is not particularly good, but it's 328, which is a lot better than his 226 WOBA.
Walk rate is way down.
Yeah, his walk rate's way down because he's chasing a lot more. And he, like, statistically, he looks like a guy who's pressing, who just is like, wants so badly to go hit 50 bombs that he's just like,
right,
he's trying to hit 50 bombs in each at bat instead of just like having a good at bat and seeing how things go. And I think he's sort of in his own head a little bit when I look at it statistically, because like, he's not, there doesn't seem anything like physically wrong. Like, his contact rate is fine. His contact rate is up. He's not striking out more. He's striking out less. He's hitting the ball harder than he did last year. It's just, he's swinging at a bunch of pitches he shouldn't be swinging at. And so I think once he sort of gets right, that'll be fine. It's just a question of when that switch will flip for him. Chanuel, on the other hand, I'm cutting. I'm done. Like, here's the thing with Chanuel. The hope with him was that he would find some power, because we know the on-base skills are legit. And the issue I have is there is just no evidence and no reason to believe he will ever hit for any power. Right? The hope was like, oh, he's still young. He's only, you know, he's turned 22 back in February. Like, he's a kid. And so, like, maybe he can grow into some power. And maybe he will. Like, maybe he will at some point, but it's just not there. And so what you're ending up with is like a poor man's Luis Arias or a poor man's Stephen Kwan, but at first base. Right.
Yeah,
and now, on top of everything else, like, in the minors and in the majors last year, he was carrying, like, you know, he made three stops in the minors last year, and in double A, he had an 11.8% strikeout rate. That was as bad as his strikeout rate got. Then he went to the majors, it was 14.4%. It's almost to 25% this year. He struck out again tonight. Now, I think that he's a patient and talented enough hitter that that will eventually correct. But like right now, he's gotten like last year he was a very patient hitter. This year he is being absurdly patient. He's not swinging at anything in the zone or out of the zone, which is allowing him to keep walking. But when he makes no contact, none. And so I don't know, strong contact, right? Like, I just don't know how long I am interested in sitting on a guy who I'm like, oh, well, if he brings the strikeout rate down, then he'll get back up to being like a 360 on base with a 330 slugging. And I think that's sort of the direction this is headed right now.
Yeah, the Angels were insanely aggressive with him. And part of me thought, now that Ohtani's gone, they might just let him cook a little bit more, kind of try and figure out that power stroke.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you guys is how, I don't want to say cold, but how you're like, I'm done. I'm going to cut him. Like the cut side of Atnu is definitely something I need to embrace more, because I think I haven't made a move in this league in like 26 days. Like, cause I like this team a lot, but I have wanted to pick up a couple people and didn't know who to get rid of. So you might've talked me into that. He's been on my trade block for weeks.
No one's going to trade for him. Like, there's just not going to be interest in him because he's just not doing enough. And I think like, I mean, if you look at his Z swing based on StatCast, so I pulled up a leaderboard of StatCast Z swing players with at least 40 plate appearances. There's 287 players with 40 plate appearances so far. He has the third lowest Z swing. And well, that feels like, oh yeah, you know, he's being selective. The guys around him are Ha-Seong Kim, who is excellent, Jonathan India, and Kevin Biggio. And that's as not good a list as Kim is, no, like, again, if he were a middle infielder or even an outfielder, then I start to think like, okay, you know, those positions can be hard to fill, but like at first base, it's just not gonna work. So I am out on Chanuel. I'm not suggesting by any means that like the Angels should write him off. Like, oh, he's done. Right. His career's gonna be terrible. It's just like, he'll be on some of my watch lists. And if he start, like, I don't know. I like right now he has a max EV for his career of 103.5. This year it's just 101.6. If he hit like a couple of balls, 105, I might be like, oh, there's some growth there. There's some development. I can see something. But for now, I'm done.
Not Anaheim. The Angels ballpark is a great place for right-handed power too. It's like second or third to Great American. Like, just
some power.
Just do a little bit.
Yeah, he's not doing it though. Anyways, we're about at an hour here, and we're going to try to wrap up. But you had a question for me, and I'm gonna bring back an old segment back at the beginning of this show when Pete was new to Auto New. He would do the Auto New question of the day, where he would have some question about Auto New that he needed answered, and he would just ask, and I would answer it. And you hit me up with a question today, so we're going to bring back the Auto New question of the day. Raymond, what was the question you wanted me to answer?
Yeah, so last year when my team was terrible, I had three corner infielders that were worth playing. That was the only good part of my team. Maybe I had three first basemen, whatever it was. I couldn't play all of them.
Yeah.
And so your starting lineup in Atnu has a middle infield spot, but does not have a corner infield spot. Why?
Why? It's a good question. And I was, you know, I think people who have listened to the show have heard me talk about this a little bit, not this question specifically before, but my history with Atnu before. And I was telling you before we came on, like I helped develop the rules for Atnu with Niv Shah, the creator of Atnu, back in the day. Niv and I and another friend of ours were the ones who sort of conceptualized it, built it, started the first league. We played a full season with 9 teams, one of whom quit after the draft. So there were really just 8 teams for that first year before we sort of found everybody we were looking for and built the our original league, which has now been going for 20 years. And then Niv eventually launched this thing. So I was around for these early decisions. And when we founded Otter New, we were building the first league. The thing we were trying to do was mimic the job of a real GM. And so that's like, we have 40-man rosters because real GMs have 40-man rosters. Those rosters have to contain your top prospects and your active roster because that's the balance that a major league GM has, right? Like, they have to decide how they want to use those 40 spots and how many of them are for depth and how many of them are to stash a guy that they think is great future value. And so we wanted to force all those same decisions. We wanted a budget because even though there isn't a salary cap in baseball, GMs get a budget, right? The owner says this is what we can spend this year. And so we wanted to sort of replicate that. And so we started looking at lineups. We wanted the lineups. So the lineups in fantasy are always bigger than the 8, 9 guys on a real team. And so we knew we were going to be bigger than that. And what we wanted to do was build lineups that sort of replicated how major league teams built their rosters. So, starting with pitchers, like they have most teams, especially then, now there's more 6-man rotations popping up, but most teams had a 5-man rotation, so we have 5 starting pitcher spots. Most teams carry 7 or 8 relievers, but that seemed stupid, so we did 5 relievers. It seemed like, but we wanted real depth there, right? That is pretty unique in Otter New. Most fantasy leagues I play in have like 2 or 3 relief spots, or like 2 relief spots and 2 generic pitcher spots. Like, no, the teams carry real bullpens. We wanted you to carry a real bullpen. And so then you get to the offense, and that's like, we started to look at the time at how teams constructed their rosters, and it hasn't really changed that much. And most teams have their regular starters. They have their first baseman, their second baseman, their third baseman, their shortstop, their 3 outfielders, and a DH. Most teams carry 2 catchers, and now we only do 1 total catcher spot, but we have the 2, we are encouraging you to carry 2 catchers. The 5 outfielders, like most teams have 5 players on their roster who can play outfield at any given time, right? They have their 3 starters, they have a 4th outfielder, and maybe one of those 3 starters platoons or something, but they've got 5 guys that can play the outfield. Every team has a backup middle infielder, right? You have to have a guy. Maybe your second baseman can play short, but like you need somebody who can step into that spot. Most teams do not carry an extra corner infielder, not beyond their DH.
Right.
Right. So your DH might be a corner infielder. Maybe you have a right fielder who sometimes plays first. You have a shortstop or a second baseman who can play third. You might have a third baseman who's your DH. You might use your DH to move guys around. But teams don't necessarily carry an extra corner infielder because it's not a position you need, because you can throw 73 other guys into that spot, right? Like, you got a good catcher. He plays first base occasionally. Your second baseman plays third occasionally. Like, you can make those kinds of maneuvers. We just didn't see most teams, most major league teams, saying we have a first baseman and we have a third baseman and we have a guy to back those guys up. If they did, that guy was their DH, which fills the util spot. So right. That was the rationale. It was what we felt at the time. And I think looking at rosters now, this is still true. Teams just don't carry a true backup third baseman / first baseman unless that's the guy DHing for them. They might carry a guy who can play first, third, and outfield, but they teams have 5 outfielders, they have 3 middle infielders, they've got their 2 corner guys, and then they may have a DH who is also a corner guy. But yeah. So that's the rationale for that. It comes up, that question comes up often. People are like, because people like having that corner infield spot. Like my CBS league that I really like we have a corner infield spot there. I like having the corner infield spot there. It's a tough decision, but I think the right one.
I think you're doing it the right way. And like in real life baseball, your best hitters usually play corner infield, right? Third and first are offensive first positions. So sure. The fact that your backup maybe plays 5 or 10 games there just to get that guy off his feet, and maybe he goes to DH so he can still hit. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I think, like, you know, if I start to poke around on, like, roster resource right now, and I'm just going through, like, just go through the American League really, really quickly. I'll look at a few teams. The Orioles, the first team that comes up alphabetically. Their bench is an outfielder in Austin Hayes, an infielder outfielder in Jorge Mateo, who's primarily a middle infielder. Ramon Urias, who's primarily a middle infielder, and a catcher. Their DH is Ryan Mountcastle. He is a corner infielder, but he's also their DH. And so he fills that util spot, right? So, like, I go to Boston. Boston's got on their bench, so their DH is really an outfielder in Yoshida. They've got Dalbec, Hamilton, and Pablo Reyes on the bench. Bobby Dalbec might be sort of the closest thing to a true corner infield backup. I don't think he's on their roster because they expect him to stay on their roster.
Right.
So, you know, the White Sox, I don't know if I'm going to base anything on the White Sox, but their bench is two outfielders, a catcher, and then Lenin Sosa, who's a middle infielder. Their DH is really an outfielder, so they really don't have another corner guy at all. Cleveland has David Fry, who's really a catcher who plays sort of all over the place. Austin Hedges is a catcher. Gabriel Arias is the guy who would back up third base if they needed somebody else to play third base, but he's a middle infielder. And then they've got an outfielder in Ramon Laureano, and their DH is an outfielder in Esteban Florial, at least according to roster resource, right? So, like, this is, you know, it is pretty typically true that teams just aren't carrying a true backup corner infielder. And so that, yeah, that's the rationale. But anyways, we've now gone over an hour. It is, like, it is so late. I don't even know what you're doing. I can't believe you agreed to do this, Raymond. It was a terrible decision on your part. But I appreciate it. So thank you for joining. It was really good
Thanks
to have you on.
Me.
I hope you are enjoying your transition to the world of Otter New and keeper leagues. And any other parting thoughts, parting questions, anything before you go?
I did have a, this is kind of philosophical, but given, like, the recent rule changes, has there been any thought to, like, decreasing the value for steals hypothetically?
No. And I, you know, I'd have to talk to Niv to see if he's really, like, debated this, but the reality is the increase in stolen bases doesn't make those stolen bases
less valuable
to the team. Right.
It
doesn't change the fact that if you're on first and now you're on second, you've increased your team's chances of scoring by whatever percentage, whatever run total you've done. And if you get caught stealing, it doesn't change the fact that you've, you know, it hurt your team by that same amount or by a different amount, actually. But so there are, like, the reality is the way you measure, the way the linear weight stuff works, like, it does change slightly over time as different eras roll in and out and the ball flies differently and blah, 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 blah. Those changes are not huge. And so Niv has historically felt like resetting the way points work every year because, oh, a home run is, you know, 1% less valuable this year and a double is 2% more valuable. And it's like, it's just, there's not enough value in making those changes to want to reset the points every year, which would just be chaos, I think. And so I think this falls under that. Like, it is possible that there has been, like the value of a stolen base doesn't change because stolen bases are more or less common. It will change because the run environment changes, right? So, like, if Major League Baseball deadens the ball and there's fewer home runs, again, stolen bases will become more important, right? Because the ability to move up that extra base and come in on a single increases in value if that single becomes more likely and a home run less likely. So there are some things that change, but they're not enough that they would, like, you'd be looking at very small changes year to year and it would just create chaos, I think. So
I think
that
point
hopefully answers your question.
Absolutely.
All right, well, Raymond, again, thanks for joining. Can you remind people where they can find you?
Yeah, I'm at Raymond Atherton on Twitter, X, whatever you call it. And I'm probably 40% of the Fantasy Ace Ball podcast.
Yeah, so definitely recommend checking out the Fantasy Ace Ball podcast. Really good content, good show, fun to listen to. So again, Raymond, thanks for joining. And for listeners, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.
Thank you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.